Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian on this Wednesday afternoon. He is off getting things set up in the Oshkosh Air Support Studios up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, proving that signal up there for 98.3 FM. WISS 1100 AM, and in his absence, I am joined by William Walter remotely today. But Will,
I'm back, party people.
Yeah, how you doing, man? See, this is my strategy to push back this winter blizzard that is reportedly going to be upon us shortly. Is if I keep having you on, you and Mother Nature, you know, you got the will they, won't they kind of thing going on, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
But I'm hoping.
Well, I'm not going to give away my secrets, but you're close enough. Yeah.
I'm touching on something there. But Mother Nature set to drop a lot of snow across the state of Wisconsin. Here, you're listening to the fine program across the state of Wisconsin on Civic Media in Madison, broadcasting from the Solidarity Realty Studios, Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM. We're also on the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM in Waukesha, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, and Radio from the Center in Richland Center. If you want to join the show on this Wednesday afternoon, feel free to give us a call, send us a text, 844-967-2789. And we are produced, as always, by the amazing Evan. Evan, we appreciate you doing everything you're doing behind the board and lightly screening those phone calls. Again, the number to call, 844-967-2789. Will, in anticipation of the blizzard, let's talk some Wisconsin headlines. Let's talk about what's going on here in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, first, I'd like a little bit of credit for managing to hold it off until Thursday. Unfortunately, I won't be able to be on the show tomorrow because then I'd ruin my reputation. But it was supposed to hit earlier this week, and I tried to negotiate another Buffalo deal, and she just wasn't having it.
Yeah, no. It's interesting. I love the weather maps that they can show you of where the anticipated snowfall is around the Great Lakes. To me, it's just... it's almost like soothing to watch some of those forecast model maps, because it's just a lot of ebb and flow, and you kind of see the different patterns of the jet stream and whatnot, and it's pretty cool. And folks, if you are not preparing for blizzard conditions across the state of Wisconsin, you're going to want to stay tuned. We got weatherology updates at the every quarter hour break, so you can stay tuned there, or you can check out your local weather service, but there is some snow coming. Be prepared, be ready to take precautions, add some extra time to your commutes over the next 2 days, because the snow will be here before you know it, set to
and
begin
cold.
Falling. Yeah.
It's going to be cold. To jump into politics a little bit, Luke, what do you think the odds are that that Ted Cruz flies off to Cancun with Texas? You know, I saw Houston and Dallas are expecting like -6 wind chills over the weekend. Like, people are going to die. Texas has done nothing to prepare their constituents for this since it happened quite literally last year.
2 years ago.
My apologies. Yeah.
I believe it was 2 years ago.
I just can't understand.
The Cancun Ted was 2020, I believe. I could be wrong, but I believe
you
it
had
was
Cancun Cruz just sitting there, Luke.
Yeah.
You went with Ted? Ugh. All right.
Cruz. Hey, you're right. A little, man, I got to be careful. Too much alliteration can be bad on the mouth as well. But my fiance, not very political individual, she chuckled and then sent me a map, but it was the nighttime light map of the United States, and the warning was, look out, this might be happening later this week, and then just Texas was completely black because joking about how the power grid has not been modernized. They have an isolated power grid down in Texas. And she sent it to me, and she goes, "Huh, I understood this joke." And I was like, "Okay, And she's not a political individual, but she is aware that Texas has some problems when it comes to the cold. So, yeah, these conditions are nothing to joke about. It is absolutely something that you need to keep an eye on, make a plan for. And if you live in Texas, you should vote for individuals that would take steps to modernize your power grid and be able to account for the cold when it comes, because we're going to deal with more extreme weather conditions like this week more and more frequently. It's coming, and it's not stopping. And so if you vote for politicians that continuously deny reality and refuse to actually take action to address steps like down in Texas, modernizing the power grid, you could end up with, I don't know, say divided government, which is what we have here in Wisconsin, Will. And we're getting a nice little forecast of not weather, but what the state is going to look like in 2023 with the divided government that we have, a Republican-led legislature and a Democrat in the governor's mansion. And it's pretty interesting reporting over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Interesting in the sense that, well, there's nothing else to talk about, Will, so we might as well talk about this, because the legislative session will kick off pretty soon here. When we wrap up the holidays, the legislature is scheduled to convene the first time in roughly 10 months.
They'll have a solid 6 weeks before it's time to call it a year.
Well, this year is going to be an odd number year, Will. So there will be a little bit more work done. Not necessarily a whole lot more work done in the legislature, but
a little bit more than one is two, Luke.
Exactly. But a budget does need to be worked on and passed.
True,
and so that is something that the legislature will be tasked with. But it seems like the legislature and the governor are at odds, and I'm curious to know if you think there's going to be any form of compromise, any form of a shared ground that can be found between these two sides. But we're getting reports now that the governor is not going to support either of the two legislative priorities that Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu, the Republicans that lead the state assembly and state senate respectively, they're not going to get support from the governor. They're going to be pretty much dead on arrival. And is this shocking to you, Will, or what are your thoughts on Evers coming out pretty sternly here in 2022 still, saying that's not going to fly in 2023?
I'm really excited. I'm happy to see that that Governor Evers is holding the line at this point. You know, he won his re-election bid pretty heavily. I think the voters in the state showed that they did not support a lot of these programs, such as, you know, universal school choice. The Republican legislature, Voss, LeMahieu, and all have been adamant that they will not give any more money to the public system unless they are given money for their voucher programs. And to see Tony, before the new year even starts, coming out and saying, like, no, I have no interest in that. I believe the quote was, I'm looking forward to what the proposal is, but I'm not sure we have the same description or definition of what big is, when he was referring to the funding increases for public schools. And he went on to say, second of all, I'm guessing that even in the Republican caucus, there's not support for universal choice. We'll see. I'll look at what happens. But my obvious druthers and what I spend most of my time thinking about is making sure we appropriately fund our public schools. He has plans to propose a $2 billion funding increase for K-12 schools in the next 2 year state budget, and said yesterday that lawmakers should make a priority out of addressing the skyrocketing rate of Wisconsin residents voting to increase their property taxes to pay for school district costs. Most residents recognize the value in education, particularly public education. A society is predicated on well-trained, knowledgeable, skilled individuals able to go and complete whatever their job may be. I can't understand why this is not something that the Republican legislature and the elected Democrats can agree on, because, you know, Republicans will always make it about themselves. My personal thought process is, much like the branding behind Ivy League educations, right? You're not necessarily going there because you're getting better education. You're going there because you're making really good connections. You're meeting really good people that can help push your career along. The Republicans want these private school vouchers so that wealthy individuals can send their children to better, superior schools that will then give them an immediate leg up once they graduate and move into college and move into their professional careers.
Yeah, it's the fact that there's been a right-wing attack on public education for so long in this state only goes so far, because we did see here in 2022 that individually, communities want to support their public schools. They raise their own taxes on themselves in support of their public schools needing more revenue. And so Republicans using these giant loudspeakers like right-wing talk radio, Fox News, Newsmax, all of these outlets that tried to demonize teachers, teachers' unions, public education, they fall short when actually able to deliver, because communities still want their kids to have a good public education. So there's only so much division that can be spouted into the system before you see communities saying, well, that's fine, but I'm going to vote for more funding for my school. I'm going to vote for more funding for our local school districts. And so to me, it's always interesting to see how that shakes down between who individuals are sending to the state government to represent them here in Madison, to then also turn around and they're voting for individuals that want to cut school funding, like Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu and Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature. But then at the same time, they're like, well, no, I want local funding for my school, so I'm going to raise my own property taxes that way. It's very, very
the disconnect is fascinating.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum here in the state of Wisconsin, and that's why we here at Dueling Tangents like to talk about it. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to join the conversation, share a tangent with us on this Wednesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. You can follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. You can follow the network on Twitter at Civic Media US. Will, what's your Twitter handle? Throw it out there for the people.
It is WillWalter93, WILWALTER93. Only one L, baby. Luca, I confused Luke with that one earlier today, too.
This is the first time hearing of it. To me, W-I-L-L is both the will of the way.
It's the word. No, it's the word. I will do blank. I will do X, Y, Z.
All right. Well, where there's a will, there's a way.
I will die on this hill.
Here on Dueling Tangents. we're going to be here all hour long on this Wednesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. We're going to continue on with some more Wisconsin headlines and get to some national ones as well as your phone calls. We'll be right back.
Shame, shame.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the show, share a tangent with us on this Wednesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. And Will, one of the interesting points of these budget negotiations, $6.6
billion. That's billion with a B.
Billion with a B. Unprecedented amount of surplus that the state legislature and the governor are going to have to use for this next budget cycle. I don't believe we would be in this situation if it wasn't for the assistance that the federal government has provided throughout the COVID-19 pandemic to be able to ensure that states had the resources needed to both roll out vaccines, to make up for lost revenue from the pandemic. The mobilization, showing that our government can, in the time of the worst pandemic we've had in a century, and a century like actually 100 years, not just how 2022 is felt, but like an actual century, was critical. The mobilization and the authorization of those funds to assist state, community, all levels of government to, and yes, that includes the stimulus checks to be able to ensure that individuals had the resources they needed during times of hardship. Across the board, the response was warranted for the COVID-19 pandemic. And because of actions taken like that, rather than seeing an economic collapse, we have states, including here in Wisconsin, that have this unprecedented amount of surplus. It can be used in so many different ways to further invest in Wisconsin. But the debate in 2023 is going to come down to, well, should we invest in Wisconsin or should we cut taxes? And for so many, that lens is going to be, oh, well, let's just cut taxes. We have a surplus. Let's send that money back to the people. Rather than using the support from the federal government and the relief programs that Governor Tony Evers authorized through the federal funding, because again, the Wisconsin legislature did not have control over that. They were not responsible for the way that the state of Wisconsin responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. They actually missed out on millions of federal relief funds because they didn't act fast enough as the Republican-led legislature waited to authorize the receiving of some of those funds.
Remember my story about comparing federal funds to cocaine? That was my Republican legislator.
Yeah, the moderate. Right? In that that 8th yeah. state Senate district race?
Oh, God, I hate this.
Yeah, that individual. Dan Knoedl is who Will is referring to, folks. If you missed a past story that Will shared on that one, you can go to civicmedia.us, click on the Dueling Tangents podcast page. You can see all past shows and catch up on what Will was referencing there. But one of the other important things is we've seen the need of childcare for individuals struggling to be able to find it throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and really deserts of childcare providing options around the state. And so childcare was a huge area that Governor Evers and the federal government took to try to get more childcare options out there, because with a hybrid model of either working remotely from home or having to do some days in the office, childcare is vital for individuals that couldn't send their kids to school during the pandemic. And so now we're learning, Will, and this is reporting over at WPR.org, that Wisconsin childcare providers struggle as COVID-19 relief funds end. Mm-hmm. And so the importance of continuing to fund programs like these.
This is the kind of middle class working people relief that the government can realistically provide outside of simply let's cut everybody's taxes. You know, when you were referencing how we can accurately help the majority of individuals, this would be a situation where the government could do that. And I think a lot of these issues, Luke, they're kind of intertwined, right? With the tax cuts, for example, both parties are supporting a tax cut with this additional state surplus. However, Tony Evers is proposing a 10% income tax cut for middle-class residents, while Devin LeMahieu said last week he's working on a proposal to implement a flat income tax of 3.5% in Wisconsin. Evers, of course, came out and said he does not support a flat income tax and is unlikely to support any proposal that cuts taxes for filers in the top bracket. But that is, as always, a priority for Republican lawmakers. Now, when it comes to the childcare providers struggling with COVID-19 relief funds ending, nationally, about 43% of childcare center directors and 37% of family childcare providers said that they would have to raise tuition when these grants end. And nearly a quarter said that their programs would lose staff or have to cut teacher wages. That number is even worse in Wisconsin. Up to 60% of childcare center directors in the state who responded to WPR's survey said that they would have to raise tuition, while 34% said they would have to cut wages or end salary increases for early childhood educators. This is just not sustainable in the long term, especially when you consider that childcare in Wisconsin is already extremely expensive. It is ranked 20th among states, with the District of Columbia being the most expensive infant care, but the average annual cost of childcare was nearly $12,600 in October of 2020.
Yeah.
Almost $13,000 per year.
And that was 2 years ago. So I'm certain that those costs have gone up in over the last 2 years. But hey, Will, why address this problem when we can just cut wealthy people's taxes? Isn't that the solution for
the job creators, right? That money will trickle down eventually or something.
Eventually
or so
it'll get
told.
To the childcare providers. Eventually. That's what we're told. Folks, you're listening.
Don't forget either. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You're listening to Dueling Tangents. Sorry, I went to cut you shy there. Will, we got a commercial break coming up here, but we're going to continue the conversation. Take a couple of tangents when we get back on the other side of this commercial break. You're listening across Civic Media. The number to share your tangent at 844-967-2789. William Walter joining me here on Dueling Tangents for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be right back. Tangents. If you want to join the show, share a tangent with us. 844-967-2789. Will, gonna taking a step away from Wisconsin headlines because there's so much going on around the country, and I mean,
don't remind me, Luke.
I barely got to talk about the World Cup this weekend. It was an amazing final. I went to a sports bar, was visiting some family down in the Chicagoland area. I went to a sports bar while others were making Christmas cookies and stuff like that. The men were supposed to make themselves kind of scarce. It was a ladies' day, and I was in the Chicagoland area anyways, though, with my fiance. So she was doing the cookie day part. I was finding other things to do, running some errands, and specifically trying to watch the World Cup because it was the final. And the sports bar I found myself in, everybody was cheering for Argentina. And I didn't really have a horse in the race. I just wanted a good match. Got there for a little bit towards the end of the first half, but got to catch all of the second half, the extra time, and the PKs. And I was kind of cheering for Mbappe. Like, he was having the game of his life. Like, he did everything absolutely possible to try to win it for France to get back-to-back titles, and so I was kind of one of the lone France cheerers I could care less who the outcome was, but invested in this cup with Mbappe after Germany lost and had their early exit after the group play, and so watching Mbappe play, tie it up with two goals in less than 2 minutes, it was phenomenal, and everybody in this sports bar just erupted after the PKs, though, and Argentina took the win, and congratulations to Argentina. Very excellent performance throughout the entire tournament, well deserved as well. It's not like it was a bad match. It was probably one of the best games I think you could ever watch in a
years.
World Cup.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So if I was joking with a friend, Hawk Sullivan, owner and proprietor of Hawk Sun State and the Jade Monkey and the Atomic Koi, and Hawk was like, if you've never watched soccer before, you might as well just stop now. If that was the only game that you've ever watched of soccer, just stop watching soccer.
It can't
soccer.
Get any better than
yes,
that. Just
because
call it a day.
It will never be better than that World Cup final. And so Hawk was kind of joking about that when he and I were discussing the match. So he thought that very similar feelings as mine, that it was an excellent game. Congratulations to Argentina. And you were doing some stuff over the weekend, too. You participated in the day of action for UAW 180 down in the Racine area. What's going on with the labor movement and the strike that is one of the longest strikes here in Wisconsin and the nation?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, something that we have touched on this show numerous times before is the importance of unity amongst the working class. We don't have the money, we don't have the power, we don't have the connections to compete with these multinational corporate conglomerates, but what we do have is each other. We have the numbers, we are the engine of the American economy. Now, UAW 180 has been on strike for nearly 7 months now, I believe. And in the middle of December, it was cold. I'd be lying if I told you otherwise, but they held a rally, a Solidarity Day event, and let me tell you, it was incredible. Turnout was fantastic. Nobody wants to spend a Saturday afternoon standing in the freezing cold with the blustery wind, getting to the point you can't feel your fingers after 10 minutes. But people, especially the working class, understand the importance of unity and standing together. So they showed up, and they showed up in numbers. Now, there was a number of excellent speakers. I'll start the shout out to Brian Pfeiffer and friend of the show, Rick Urrutia of the We Rise Fighting Labor podcast, who spoke, Kevin Miller, who's a retired Detroit firefighter, Emma and Diana Valencia of 9 to 5 Solidarity Forever, Yasin Mahdi, the president of UAW 180, Christine Newman-Ortiz of Voices de la Frontera was there, Michael Jones of the Madison Teachers, Nick Guernsey, the president of UAW 807 from Burlington, Iowa. You know, there were people coming from all over.
I believe Burlington, Iowa was the other plant that has also been striking a similar time frame that the UAW 180 has as well. So
I believe so, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie Bloomingdale, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, spoke. Youth Empowered in the Struggle spoke. I mean, this was just an incredible, incredible, incredible event. Connie Smith, the president of Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Professionals. DeAndre Jackson of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. This, I cannot emphasize how important it is to see not just regular people showing up at this event, but workers from different industries who all understand that our collective bargaining power is stronger when we are together than it is when we are apart. And so, I mean, there were even a lot of, I was so happy to see Greta Neubauer was there. So elected officials understand this is important. Now, were there any Republican elected officials there? Of course not. But it just goes to show that at the local level, your politicians do care and they're trying their best. There's only so much that can be done when there's a near supermajority in the state legislature. I even talked to Mr. Barnes, Mandela's father, and he is such a fascinating individual with such a long history of awesome progressive work. He's been involved with labor for years and years and years. You can't put a price on... how do I phrase this? There's nothing I love more than people putting their money where their mouth is. They're showing up on a Saturday to defend the issues that are important to them. And then when they come out and like-minded individuals come out and try to run for these races, you know that they have the best interests of the working class at heart because they've been doing it. They have been putting in the work. They have been coming to these events, standing in solidarity with each other. We had an awesome caravan where Tim Corden and the Building Unity bus drove around Racine. We all followed hundreds and hundreds of cars, so many cars that a lot of us got lost getting stuck at red lights and stuff, right? And then we went to the picket line and we stood up front and we made our voices heard and we were loud and we were proud. And God, like I'm not a lyricist, right? I don't have the kind of Webster's Dictionary vocabulary to sit here and spew out 3 and 4 syllable words about how incredibly amazing the experience was. But I highly advise anybody who recognizes the importance of this to reach out to these unions, reach out to the working class people that are putting their job, their families, their livelihood on the line day after day and demanding contracts that are fair and accurately reflect the work that our hardworking working class Wisconsinites and Americans in general are putting in day in and day out, because these are the people that are keeping our economy rolling. These are the people that society is built on. These are the people that are irreplaceable.
Yeah. And the narrative that throughout a pandemic, when you refer to individuals as essential workers, and then when things start to pick back up again and the economy is going along, but there are workers demanding their equal share for what they bring to the table, it's not that nobody wants to work anymore. It's that nobody wants to work for less. And so to recognize...
Nobody wants to be exploited.
Exactly. And so it is absolutely a movement that needs to be talked about, and having the conversation that picket line has been going on in southeastern Wisconsin for, I believe, over 7 months now, that the UAW Local 180 in Racine is on the picket lines. And we got to be having those conversations, because if you're only focused on the big shiny objects and not at the hard work, like Will is describing, of the day in and day out of those picket lines, you can lose sight of what's going on and what those workers are fighting for in southeastern mm-hmm. Wisconsin.
We were standing out there, Luke. The presentations and the speakers were maybe an hour, hour 15, hour 30, you know. These are working class people. They're very respectful of the fact that nobody wants to be out there in the cold. I couldn't feel my fingers after X amount of time, but I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, man, I'm miserable after being out here for 45 minutes, 50 minutes. Imagine these people that are out there every single day demanding fair wages and a fair working environment for themselves, for their families, for their friends, for their coworkers. If I can't be out here for 1 hour on one Saturday afternoon, man, like Americans just don't recognize how the situations that some of us have and the kind of work behind the scenes that goes into creating the world that we have become accustomed to. You know, the weekends, for example, wouldn't exist without organized labor. The 40-hour work week wouldn't exist without organized labor. There were people who years and years ago, they were out there in the streets day after day putting mm-hmm. in the work mm-hmm. to earn the right that we have enjoyed today. And some of their and some of these people are still out there, still putting in this work, and we have to stand with them.
Yeah, it's a movement that needs to continue. Speaking of very difficult movements that need to continue and the support that can be provided to those struggling right now, we've got President Zelensky of Ukraine visiting Washington, D.C. today. Speaking with President Biden in the Oval Office, I believe it's the first time since the Russian invasion of Ukraine back in February earlier this year that Zelensky has left the country. And so pretty monumental step that he is taking today, visiting the White House in Washington, D.C., having conversations with the Biden administration for the continued support that the United States is providing for Ukraine to fight off an invasion of their country. The Vladimir Putin is inflicting a war unjustifiably in Ukraine, and the fact that this has continued now on for, I believe we're approaching 10 months. It was towards the end of February when Russia invaded Ukraine earlier this year, and it cannot go, the stress and the supply chains and the problems that we've seen in the global economy throughout 2022 that has made this year feel like so many more than just 1 year is a lot to do with the Russian aggression going on in Eastern Europe as well. And so the fact that now with Republicans taking control of the U.S. House of Representatives and it being thrown into question of whether or not the United States will continue to support Ukraine in arms and being able to fight back properly against the Russian aggression is pretty fascinating stance of where our politics are, Will. The fact that politics are not ending at the water's edge and we are not supporting, or at least we will not have guaranteed support for an ally as they face a unjustified war is a pretty telling state right now that Republicans may use Ukraine support as a political bargaining chip when it comes to trying to do things at the national level, like gutting Social Security, gutting Medicaid, rolling back programs that provide to individuals that have been paying into them for years. Those are the priorities of Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in D.C. And so the fact that Zelensky is here before President Biden today and meeting with him is a pretty tremendous step when it comes to showing support for him and for Ukraine in this continued war.
You mentioned the Republican aspect of this. I think what's really interesting is kind of the infighting that we're seeing over the Ukraine situation. Mitch McConnell was quoted yesterday or the day before, I believe yesterday, Tuesday, saying providing assistance for Ukrainians to defeat the Russians is the number one priority for the United States right now, according to most Republicans. He went on to say that's how we see the challenges confronting the country at this moment. Well, a lot of other elected Republicans have been, let's say, not very big fans of that quote coming out in, you know, Derek Van Orden on Twitter listed six different things that he thought were more important and was saying, why are we trusting Mitch McConnell to do this? You know, yada, 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 yada. I don't know. Is this the break? Is this the straw that's going to topple break the camel's back or what? I don't know.
It's going to be very interesting to see the continued, I don't know if cracks is the right word for it, because they're almost fissures in the Republican Party in D.C. And to see Kevin McCarthy try to get to 218 to get the speakership is going to be a continued spectacle to watch and keep an eye on. But there's a lot of important things going on that you want to stay tuned. So we appreciate you listening to Dueling Tangents as we continue to break them down, try to relate them for you. If you want to share a tangent with us, we got one more segment left coming up in today's show. 844-967-2789. You can call or text. And maybe we'll get to the giant Twitter troll that's been going around as well. We haven't got to pin down that story, but Will and I are going to dive into that and some others when we get back. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the program, share a tangent with us on this Wednesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. And Will, we'd be remiss if, in the time that you've been joining me on the airwaves this week, if we didn't discuss the elephant in the room that is Elon Musk.
Oh, I've been waiting for this. This is the only reason I've been hitting you up all week. I just wanted my one moment of glory to come on and talk about Elon.
You wanted to be able to vent about this a little bit. And honestly, I know we've joked in the past that we're ride or die. It's going to be one day if the app crashes, we'll just try to log on and it won't work anymore. And then that's just how it is. It's just going to be interesting. And this saga has been fascinating, to put it mildly, I guess, because it's outrageous, it's upsetting, but he is now taking the stance that I think Donald Trump took in 2015, where he's just going to flood the zone and he's going to make everybody talk about Elon to try to and everybody on Twitter talk about Elon to try to generate more outrage, and it's a cycle that right-wing pundits use all the time. That get the conversation talking about whatever the crazy thing that they're doing, and then all of a sudden everybody's there talking about it though, and you're logging onto the app to say, oh, okay, what did Elon do now? What's the crazy thing that Elon's doing now? He monetizes and monopolizes the conversation by the outrage and that he's creating on the platform that he spent $44 billion to acquire. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Where are you kind of coming at where we are now after the Twitter files have been dropping and there's reports that there are now beds in the San Francisco office so that the hardcore Twitter employees can be there 24/7 and
you mean the employees that are on visas and don't have the opportunity to go elsewhere. So yeah, Elon knows he can just exploit them as much as he'd like. I mean, he is the classic narcissistic megalomaniac that every Hollywood, you know, movie or television show in the 90s and early 2000s would have as the main villain, but it would be cartoonish, almost unbelievable that a human being could be so like lost in their own reality. And then you see Elon Musk and it's like, oh, maybe not. Maybe this was all possible. I mean, the guy had this aura around him, right? That he's some kind of brilliant savior. And so many people, especially with Tesla's stock, believe that. Oh, Elon's a genius, blah, 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 to the point where Tesla had north of $1 trillion market cap. It sells less vehicles than Ford, Toyota, Chevrolet, General Motors, but its stock was, what, like 4 or 5 times higher? That's absurd. And so he buys Twitter, and Twitter kind of collapses. He realizes pretty quickly, oh, this is not as open and shut a case as I thought it would be. Turns out there's a reason that there were rules and regulations behind a lot of what was allowed and what was not allowed. And he thinks because he's a billionaire that he is beyond repercussions. He can do all of these things, yada, yada, yada. You know, we saw you were discussing the World Cup final earlier. We saw that famous image of him hanging out with Jared Kushner there. And let's not forget that I forgot who exactly, but I believe it's one of the Saudi crown princes is like the second or third largest investor in all of Twitter now, $1.3 billion.
Yeah, something like that. It's I don't know the exact numbers, but there I know that there is some Saudi capital invested into the company now.
I wouldn't be surprised if that should I resign poll that coincidentally came up after he was at the World Cup final with all these incredibly wealthy investors had more to do with the fact that they told him, dude, get out. or find someone else to do it, you're crashing our investment. And then he can play it off as, well, it was, you know, it was my decision. I'm doing this myself, because, you know, he's so self-centered that, and his ego is just so incredibly massive, he can't take a loss in any situation, very similar to Donald Trump. So instead, he's going to create some weird situation where he can act like he's going off on his own terms and play it like it was my decision. I'm the genius behind the scenes doing this, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think the whole genius persona and the he alone can solve Twitter's problem. Like, there were plenty that there was a carousel, a merry-go-round of CEOs at Twitter trying to improve it. And fix the problems that the platform had had, and to think that Elon Musk was going to be some kind of white knight to swoop in and fix all these problems, I think has been shown that that is not going to be the case. The way that he is pretty much stripped down the company. It is a glitchy platform now. I got it some days where things won't even load, videos, articles, anything like that takes forever. So he's kind of an approach that he's taking that I do not think is very orthodox, but it is where things are right now. But there's a very interesting piece, and we've only got a couple minutes left in the show today, but Slate.com writing up the finale of the great internet grievance wars is here, but it's not what the right wing had imagined. And so it's an excellent piece that goes in talking about how now that Elon Musk has all these files from the previous corporate ownership of Twitter trying to show what kind of content moderation steps were taken after the president of the United States used the platform to be able to share messages to foment an insurrection on January 6th and ultimately taking the step of banning him from the platform. Now they're trying to paint this as, oh, well, it was a cabal of Twitter employees trying to stifle right-wing voices, and it was trying to moderate content on its platform to prevent further violence, that it would be the corporate responsibility that any social media company or any company at all would have to take if the president of the United States was using that platform to stoke that violence. And so now, and Elon came in saying that, oh, well, I'm gonna allow all of my critics to remain on Twitter, I'm not gonna ban them. And then this past weekend,
he does it anyways.
He just starts banning reporters reporting on various different stories, trying to say and drum up this false narrative that they were tweeting out assassination coordinates, essentially his real-time location. If you tweet out your real-time location, you will immediately be banned. And he's coming up with these arbitrary off-the-cuff decisions of how he was going to moderate content, which is the same thing that he's complaining about in these Twitter files, is the content moderation that the previous Twitter executive team was trying to put into place so that insurrectionists did not have a platform to further their violence.
Rules for thee, not for me.
Weird. If only that was only applicable to this billionaire and not, you know, everybody that was looking out for the wealthy and not the working folks.
And he's getting dangerously close to the violating the European Media Freedom Act, too. That's something that was touched on.
He already violated California and European labor laws when it came to just letting employees go. So he's got a lot of catching up to do with figuring out how to run a company like Twitter. It's a lot different than Tesla and SpaceX, folks. Will, we're going to have you on again soon to talk more about the Elon Musk Twitter fiasco. But, folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. Tune in tomorrow at 2 p.m. We will catch you then. If you missed any portion of this show, go check out the podcast, civicmedia.us. Click on the Dueling Tangents tab. You can see all of our past shows library. Thanks so much, Will. We'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
Stay safe this weekend, party people, and have a great holiday season if I don't talk to you before then.